Welcome to Entrepreneurship at Rowan, an official production of the award-winning Rowan Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. We cover the entrepreneurial pulse of Rowan students, faculty, and alumni. Prepare to be Rowan proud.
Hello, Rowan University, and welcome back to the Entrepreneurship at Rowan podcast. My name is Aiden Tamazian, and I'm your host for Season 4, where we get to hear from Rowan's Entrepreneurship Advisory Council. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Stephen Harbaugh, a serial entrepreneur and philanthropist right here in South Jersey. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, we're super excited. So, as you know, we're going to start off with a little lightning round, just get loose and get warmed up here. So, first question, what's a talent or skill that you wish you had?
Business or personal?
Let's do personal.
Okay. So, you know, it's funny. I look at those videos. I'd love to be that dancer on the dance floor that everybody's attracted to. You look at that. You're like, look at this guy, right?
Definitely.
And it's like, look at that. I'm like, takes a lot of skill. My wife knows that I'm not a dancer, but that's something that I'd, you know, love to achieve.
That's something. I also am not a dancer, so I feel you there. What is your favorite type of cuisine?
Now, this is crazy. So, I've eaten at some great restaurants, but a bag of Doritos in front of me would be my last meal. I don't know what they put in them.
Wow, okay.
But maybe we don't want to know what they put in Doritos, but I find that to be an awesome, awesome dish.
Interesting choice. I was expecting Italian or Chinese, but Doritos, hey, we'll take it. What's a book you think everyone should read?
So I just wrote a book called The Apple Tree Method. And of course, I think everyone should read that. That'll be out this spring. And what I do, why I tell people why I wrote it is to help people is the fact that we're all career driven. We all want to do well. Why? Because we want to make money. We want to have that freedom. We want to be able to do what we want. And there's so many people out there that just don't know the two types of money, and it's active income versus passive income. So the apple tree method is a metaphor. I use a lot of graphics in it, and it's basically the tree is the asset. Don't touch it. I'll teach you how to build that. But you can eat all those shiny apples, all the passive income, and I'll teach you how to do another tree and eventually have your own orchard. So the apple tree method, I think it should be taught in every high school. I think it should be taught in every college. And it's really my life lessons of what you should do, but my real life lessons of failure and overcoming and things like that. So I wish that book was around when I first started. And the motivation behind the book was, I don't care if I sell one copy, but if I could help people. And it's a great outline for me, and especially like today, it just keeps me kind of organized and straight as to what advice to give.
That's amazing. We'll have to add it to the collection of books over in the RCIE. I think students would love that. So I believe that a lot of people really like to know about the educational background of successful individuals. So let's start there. Did you attend college? And if so, what did you study?
So in high school, I had an incredible business teacher my senior year, and I was prepped. I was going to go to college, and I knew that I wanted to go for business. I was a CB student. If I got a B, it was like getting an A. So I went to Gloucester County College, which I took English and history, and I tried to get into those business classes, but I was itching, literally itching, and I gave it two semesters. I ended up just moving on, kind of failing out. Everybody was going to college back then, right? So it was like, wow, I'm supposed to go to college. So I didn't go to college, but I don't encourage not going, right? If you're going for, like you, engineering, people are going for a doctor or a career, but it's kind of crazy to say on a college campus right now, but it's not the end all. Like it's me, I was trying to figure out this money crap, if you will. Like if I could get that out of the way, then I can enjoy the rest of my life. And it's just sad. Like so many people out there, they end up going to work every day. 80% of them hate their job. For what? For money. And it's just really just that means of being able to make income. So fortunately, I had a couple of businesses in the beginning. They failed. I got into flipping houses, and it just, you know, snowballed from there. But I did not go to college. I encourage everybody to go, but that just was not for me. I could not sit there. I had to go out there and do it.
That's incredible. And you know, you always hear the saying, A's work for C's. And you know, I guess now we're seeing it in real life. You know, that is something that I think a lot of people will resonate with. There's definitely students out there that aren't sure if college is for them, and maybe hearing your story will inspire them take a different route. So my next question would have been, tell me about the first job you had out of college, but instead, tell me about the first company you started that you said failed.
So I told my dad, I said, look, you know, I can't sit here for another semester of this college. He said, look, you need to get your act together. And he was able, you know, he was a paycheck to paycheck kind of guy. My dad was you know, the only reason why I am where I am, it was his motivation, his coaching to get me where I am. And he's like, look, you got to get your act together. So I moved to Myrtle Beach. I guess I was 18. And I started thinking of some businesses, and I saw this jet ski rental business where this guy wanted to get out of it. And I was able to take the lease over, but I needed some co-signers for jet skis. I needed a little bit of money. I think my dad maybe borrowed someone a credit card, whatever it was. And his justification was, hey, he wants to go out. He wants to start his own business. This is money I probably would have borrowed anyway for his college. And I started a jet ski rental business, and I had it at the age of 19, 20, and 21. And the first year, the guy before me did $25,000 a year in sales. Second year, I did 50, and then I increased it to 75 and then 100, but it wasn't enough. I struggled for those 3 years, and I hated it at the time. But looking back, I was 22 years old. I got rid of it. I had two jet skis repossessed. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
But okay. Looking back, I learned marketing real fast. I learned finance. I learned management. And that was my school, if you will, for
right.
3 years. Yeah. And I'm almost glad that it didn't go well, because I might have been a cocky kid if it did real well and I made a ton of money at it. And I always tell people, like, if they're getting into real estate, or if they're start a business for a child, you know, just a kid just getting started out, or invest in a flip. And if you don't make money, or even if you break money, or if you lose money, that experience is priceless.
Of course. And so, if you don't mind sharing, what was your strategy for marketing that allowed you to grow to such, you know, an exponential rate?
In the jet ski or just in general?
In jet skis. Let's start there.
So in jet skis, I spent $130 for an airplane banner to go buy.
Oh, those are cool, though. Right? That's really cool.
And back then, that was a lot of money. And I was like, there's no way I can't do that again, right? So I was like, wow, it's a sign going up and down the beach for people to see on the beach. So I had a jet ski. It was called we had one that we kind of monitored everybody. So I came up with this contraption out of PVC pipes, and I did a banner. It said Jet Ski Rentals 238 Ride was my phone number. Mm-hmm. And I would putt up and down just beyond the breakers.
No way.
The cell phone would go off. So it was the same effect as
the
airplane. We did flyers everywhere. So, and I was always, I tell people too, I sold vacuum cleaners door to door my senior year of high school. And if anything in business, even like you, you're trying to get engineering, you have to sell yourself. You have to learn how to sell. And what does that mean? That means just kind of being passionate about what you want. And that's what I did. I went out there and I sold the services. I went to the hotels. Went to the different places, and that's really what excelled me in the real estate career is sales.
So eventually you moved on and started your company, Harbaugh Custom Homes, and this company designs and builds some of the most beautiful homes on the Jersey Shore. So first of all, congratulations. What was the inspiration behind starting this business?
Thank you. So that was after 3-4 years of flipping homes, and I started borrowing money from private investors. I didn't have the money to flip these houses. And I thought if I was able to be able to flip homes and make this money, someday I would be able to put this money into some type of passive income asset. So when I did these flips, I would always put more into them. I would always do wainscoting. I would do shiplap, and everyone loved them. And I would probably spend thousands of dollars more than I should have. But when they sold, you know, I got, you know, top dollar, and or I sold faster than my competition. But I always imagined an area where I could go over the top and just do literally tens of thousands of dollars of trim work inside. Instead of using vinyl siding, maybe I could use cedar, maybe a cedar roof. And the only place you could do that to get that money would be the beach towns. So, and this is a great story. In 2007, I secured an investor and we bought a lot for $750,000. We had a $750,000 budget to build the home. Back then in 2007, if you know anything about the economy there, it was going great, but mm-hmm. the cliffhanger was in the horizon. And we were going to sell this for 2.1, having 1.5 after commission, we were going to split 500,000. Life was good. Right. I built this house. We delivered it in 2008. It was beautiful. It was the talk of the town. We furnished it. It was absolutely beautiful. 2008 hits. 2.1, we lowered it to 2, we lowered it to 1.9. But what happened was tons of people went in between the open houses. I had to rent that to pay the mortgage. Again, at the time, devastation, worst time of my life, worst time of my career. But all of a sudden, a family came in, husband and wife, and they said, hey, we love this house. And I said, great, but we don't want to buy it. We have a teardown down the street. Can you duplicate this house on our lot? And can you add a bedroom and can you change the roofline? So I went back to my architect and came up with a number, and I built my first custom home. Then I built another house and another house. Today, 180 houses later,
wow,
I became one of the biggest custom home builders in Stone Harbor. And I tell people that because it's at the time, you think this is the worst time of your life and in your career, but it turned out to be the best thing that's ever happened to me. What it also did was it introduced me to investors. You know, I was down in Stone Harbor, June, July, and August, and you'd have these very wealthy investors come in. They own homes there, fascinated with construction. They love me. Hey, this kid can sell. So I remember just coming out of that 2008, it was 2010, 2011. I had an investor. I still have him today. We've done over 30 properties together. I said, man, I'd really like to buy a piece of land and build and sell. I think we're out of that market. That was my intention 3 years ago in 2008. He said, I'll do one with you. So what we did is we bought a piece of land and we came up with a structure where he got a preferred rate of return on his money and then we split the profit. And we did extremely well. We built it a year later and he says, wow, this went well. And we built two more. But that there was, I love the custom home building, but what that part did for me, it got me chunks of money right. to be able to roll into, and we'll talk about later, some of the commercial real estate, which is the passive income. So that I often look back, if I never went down to Stone Harbor and you know, I hated myself for doing it when 2008 hit, but what it, you know, and that's a life lesson there. I mean, and I have a ton of those where you just got to keep driving, keep plowing through because you never know where it's going to take you.
That's an awesome story. And I think one thing a lot of people might be interested in knowing is how did you go about getting these investors? How did you convince them that you were the right person to take on this business and this project?
So I remember I only had four or five houses under my belt, but the quality, the ability to build, not the ability to build and sell because I didn't have that under my belt yet, but I had sold custom homework and I said, hey, look, you know, here's a couple families that we've built for and that was beautiful. And I pulled a realtor in and then I scoured Zillow. Okay, I know this guy paid 1.1 for this lot. And I know that he sold it for $3 million. And I know it only costs about $1 million to build that. So I had all the formula and I knew there was $1 million profit. You know, take out the carry, the interest and all that. And there's about $600,000 or $700,000 profit. So that was very easy to show them. Again, sales, pitching them.
Of course.
And then when I was with the first guy who I'm still with, and it just attracts everybody else.
Very interesting. And now you spoke briefly about the crisis of 2008. But another time of crisis, especially for the shore towns, was Hurricane Sandy in 2012. What did that look like for you and what sort of impact did it have on your business?
The Hurricane Sandy was at first, again, devastating. Lots of homes were lost up in North Jersey. But another traumatic situation that turned very, very good for me and Stone Harbor. And I'll tell you why. North Jersey, if I had a house in Stone Harbor that was $3 million, the North Jersey, New York buyer out in the Hamptons and all those areas that were destroyed in North Jersey started to vacation now in Stone Harbor. Hey, there's this great town south. We can't go to the vacation area that we went to. And then that $3 million, this would be $5 million up there. Mm-hmm. So now they're in a bidding war, 3-3-1, 3-2. So we had this bubble. I mean, the natural bubble of the real estate going up, but we had an artificial bubble in that we had a market that we never had before coming, driving up this area because their value, their perceived value was a lot higher. So thank God I got in. I have my own personal home prior to that, but it ended up being a very, very good thing for the real estate market.
That's amazing. And now when you went about growing your business, obviously now it's a lot farther along than it was before. How important was it to have a structured team around you? How important was that team dynamic of, I mean, I guess it would be like your architect, your realtor, how important was that to the development of your company?
It's so funny. I just did a talk today and they said, you know, oh, he's a home builder. He's a home builder. And I don't tell too many people this. I do. I write in the book, so I guess I have to come clean. I have no idea how to build a home. I could sit down with the architects. I could sit down with the engineers. I could walk through plans. I could sell it. But if you put a hammer in with me and some nails and try to cut the roof joists and the angles of the roof and the hip roofs and things like that, I could never do it. I don't need to do it, right? What I need to do is be able to orchestrate a portfolio of people. I've got the best realtor. I've got a head of operations that now is an owner of my company who can do everything that I can. So it's really trying to put together a team, like you said, that can execute and do this. I sell very well. Like, I go out and I can sell the whole package, but don't get discouraged. Like, if you can't do something, like CEOs and companies, they can't do all of the different avenues. And that's what I kind of consider, like, I'm the, you know, the CEO, if you will, to pull all those different tasks together to achieve a home that we can build and sell. But I have an incredible team. My architects are great. In my company, Harbaugh Custom Homes in Stone Harbor, we have a designated selection coordinator, home delivery coordinator. We have a big staff. We've got about five key people. We do a good amount of volume. And people say, well, he does a lot of houses, because the client only cares about one house that you have, and it's theirs. They don't care that you've got maybe 10, 12 going on. So how I counteract that is like, hey, you don't want a guy building a home, billing you at night, you know, sending you to a selection place. We have that all in place with all our coordinators. So it has worked out very well.
That's amazing. And another thing that I think along that line, people would be interested in knowing is, how do you attract that top talent that can A, stay with you for the long term, and B, be fully qualified to do all of these different things and take on these roles and responsibilities?
One word in my office in Stone Harbor is family. Every single person has been there 10, 12 years. And I look at other friends, colleagues that have businesses, and I see how they treat their employees, their managers. Every single person in my team gets a bonus, down to the architect that I don't even own the architectural firm, down to the CAD operator who works on my plans. Everybody's part of it, and everybody gets a bonus that's designed, and they love it. They never forget that. So I just think that's great. I mean, it's, and they're there for you. It's not, I never wanted that resentment of an employee or a vendor. And I hear it a lot from who they work for.
So fast forwarding a few years now, you started your next company, Spaceworks Business Suites and Storage. What opportunities did you see in this market that led you to starting this business?
So I went through 2008, and I was dependent on active income. And this goes back to what I preach. Active income versus passive income. Active income, if you have a job right now, you actively have to go out and do it. If I'm flipping homes, I actively have to go out and do it. Right now, as we speak on this podcast, I've got five commercial buildings that if I went to the Bahamas for a month, a year, I would still make X amount of dollars a year, passive income. So how do you get to the passive income? How do you invest in something? Now, I love commercial. I started out with some duplexes and sixplexes, and we can talk about that. But the commercial part of being able, and I know it's foreign to a lot of people, oh my gosh, we got to do commercial, I can barely get my head around a duplex or a sixplex. But it's so much easier. If I had to do it all over again, that's all I would have ever invested in, because it's that easy. Once you get over into it, it's like, wow, it's not that bad. It's easier. But I was passive income driven. I always talked about, and I talked about in the beginning, where I was just starting out, and it was such a daunting, where I had my car payment, I had my rent payment, I had some other credit card payments and insurance. It was $1,000 a month. And here we are in December. And I ended up saying, okay, well, I made it. And now January hits and it resets. I'm like, I have to go out and do this again. But I fantasized about that coming in by itself automatically. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, what if I could do 50,000 or 80,000? Then I wouldn't have to work at all. And I knew there were people doing it. I just needed to figure it out. So in 2000, I guess it was 2006, 2007, I partnered up with a guy, and we bought a 6-unit apartment building. Thank God all the financing was in his name. It was in an area that started to turn. He ended up losing them both, and I was like discouraged, because my whole career up until then was, I want to get into real estate. I want to get into, you know, this passive income, but residential or multifamily is only one category of all of the real estate that's out there. So I started to look at self-storage facilities, and I knew that it took me forever to kick out tenants that didn't pay in residential. And I went to a seminar out in Las Vegas. I went to a self-storage trade show, and they said, wow, if these people don't pay, you can lock them out in 7 days. Their code won't work. And in 30 days, you can get them out. I'm like, wow, sign me up. This is a great business. So I secured a piece of land right around the corner here in Woodbury Heights. Nobody wanted it. And it took me 2 years to get the approvals. And I built this, and I leased up real, real fast. I had to negotiate with the bank, and we can get back to what led me to flip my money into that. But it was great, and I still own it today. So I had one of those. Now, same thing. 2008 hit because I built that in 2006. So it really put the pause button for me for about 5-6 years. Getting back to SpaceWorks was the second building that I built. And we decided, we say, hey, look, we're going to build a self-storage facility. And the guy that sold the land to me says, look, we have a lot of medical around here. I really don't want a self-storage facility there. But he had three lots that were sitting. And I said, well, I want to build one. And the broker said to me, he says, hey, look, we're getting a lot of requests for these individual office spaces. Why don't you build an office building in the front? And you could rent the individual offices out. You could rent out the conference room and do some storage in mini warehouses. And I'll tell you what, we have a waiting list today. Like we've been open for 5 years. It's a great diversity of rental units, office space. And I ended up changing the name of my original storage facility to SpaceWorks. So we have two of those. But the motivation behind that was, yes, I probably made $50,000, $60,000 in positive cash flow on my first storage facility. This SpaceWorks, you know, we can dive in the numbers, probably over 100, right? And then I expanded my footprint in Woodbury Heights a couple years ago. I only had 25,000 square feet on the original storage facility. I bought some houses across the street that were dilapidated. The town welcomed me with open arms because they wanted those houses down. And now I've got 50,000 square feet and I've got a couple medical. So those buildings are the passive income of rolling all that active income of flipping homes into.
Moving on now to one of your more recent companies, Harbaugh Village, which some of our listeners might even be familiar with. But for those of us who haven't heard of it before, can you tell us a little bit more about what Harbaugh Village is?
Harbaugh Village started on my front lawn.
Oh, really?
2018, I lost my father. And I remember sitting there, I was looking at that dark house, no decorations in November. And I'm thinking, I can't do this. You know, first year without dad. And I looked at my kids and I looked at, you know, he would never have wanted that, right? So as a coping mechanism, and I think if I was on a psychiatrist's couch, they would say this was the biggest case of diversion out there. I went out, loved the movie. He loved the movie. 10,500 lights. I came home and it looked like two massive commercial refrigerators on pallets. I'm like, what is that? It was the Christmas lights. Mm. So I put those up. I went out, I got the 1973 Ford Condor just from the movie, like Christmas Vacation, the station wagon. I went, I got the tree, roots and all. I would take the kids to school just to get that buzz going, marketing, right? Mm-hmm. I had the cop car. And I remember the first night we turned the lights on and I thought, well, it'll just be people locally within a mile or two. I started to see New York plates, Maryland. Wow. It was crazy. And that's what I said. And my wife's like, what did you do? She says that to me often. And she said, why don't we fill the RV or try to fill the RV with toys for underprivileged children? And the first year we did it, we got 4,000 toys.
That's amazing.
Second year we did 8,000. And the last year we did almost 13,000 toys. But we also got $40,000 in donations. So it got out of control. Year three, we were viral. We were on the Kelly Clarkson show. We did the tree lighting up in New York. They did a feature on us. So I thought this was pretty proud. I was showing everybody, I took screenshots of Apple Maps, right? And I had all the red veins in my town, which was traffic, so cool. Right?
Right.
But I created that. That's great. That's good marketing, right? Yeah. Well, the neighbors didn't think so. So we ended up taking, I said to the mayor, I said, look, bear with me. It won't be here next year. But I didn't want to stop the mission, right? I didn't want to stop the charity. We started a charity called George's House after my dad. And with that $40,000 in donations, we were able to help a family in Camden get back on their feet with housing. And then the following year, I secured some land in Mullica Hill, and I wanted to continue doing the toy drive. And I didn't know what that housing looked like at that time. My intention was just to recreate the home in the field. People would drop off gifts, and we would do just what we did at the house. But I started Googling Christmas villages in Europe. They all had a ice skating rink. They all had vendor stalls. They all had a carousel. They all had like a little downtown area. So I went on and I started Googling ice skating rinks. I started Googling. So we put this together. We built it in 75 days. It opened up. Our first year we did 45,000 people went through it, raised probably over 20,000 toys, maybe $100,000 in donations throughout that year. But I still wanted to stay on that housing mission. And when we prepaid the rent for the family in Camden, I didn't want to set them up for failure after 12 months. What happened? So I brought in a local charity called Family Promise, and I was introduced to a concept called transitional housing. Transitional housing, they had one rental home next to the Presbyterian Church in East Greenwich. I had no idea it was there. They had it for 7 years. 34 families went through it. They're allowed to stay there up to 6 months, get back on their feet. A local bank teaches them finance. They find them better jobs. They do financial literacy. They open up checking accounts. And this is folks that really want to get back on their feet.
Of course, right.
And it's a place where they can catch their breath for 6 months. And it's a warm home. And after they're through this program, they go on to either rent or buy homes of their own. So I said, you know what? This is something that I want to get behind.
Now, you touched on it just briefly, but as part of your philanthropy, you've taken on a role here with Rowan's Entrepreneurship Advisory Council. How did you first come to serve on in this position, especially since you didn't go to Rowan? How were you first acquainted with the opportunity?
Well, my wife went to Rowan here, so that's good. I actually have a graphic designer who went to Rowan, and he did all my graphics in the book. And he said, and as it's funny, as I do these podcasts and I do these videos, people, even camera guys, they're intrigued by this. They want to follow this. So Dylan, who went here, he started doing all my graphics, and he's getting into real estate too. And he says, you know, you really need to talk to Rowan. And he hooked me up with a couple of professors. And I said, look, all I want to do is if I could shed some light in a non, you know, professor way of somebody locally that's really, really doing it. And I was I look back when I told you I only went to college for 6 months, but business law, I would look at these words and I would look at it, and I was a visual person. I couldn't really get it. It was just words on a piece of paper. I am very visual. I have a ton of graphics. We were talking earlier today about two parallel roads. You know, people say, hey, I got to quit my job, or I have to quit my and start flipping houses. No, you need to stay in your active income road. And there's a parallel road called passive income. Eventually, you're going to be on just that passive income road, but they have to stay. You have to manage your time and do both. But those little graphics, I would take screenshots. I would send them to professors. My CPA, who's a huge CPA, like, he says, can you take screenshots? These graphics are, you know, I just think I need those for me,
right?
But I think people need them. So if I could shed some light and just be the inspiration for somebody just starting out, getting back to where I started, I had a book. It was called Awaken the Financial Genius. And my dad had it. It was a black and white book in the den. And I started reading it. And it was just basic real estate concepts about assets, liabilities. It talked about leveraging, passive income, you know, active income. They didn't call it that, but it was just, you know, the passive income. So in chapter one, I see in my dad's handwriting, it said goals. And it says 1,000-unit apartment building. Refinance house, take out $10,000. So I went in the living room. I said, hey, Dad, where's our 1,000-unit apartment building? And he says, well, your grandfather was a very conservative banker. And any time that I went to him with an idea, he crushed it. Oh, how many deals do you think are out there? Nah, it's pie in the sky. So when I came along and I wanted to do this, it was, you know, he was my biggest coach, my biggest motivator. But that book was written by Marco Harrelson. And I went to Myrtle Beach. I told you earlier, I was selling this Panama Jack suntan lotion. That was a summer job as I was looking for the jet ski business. And I started going through these chapters. And this guy came up to me and says, hey, what are you reading? I said, this book on real estate. I said, it's kind of interesting. He says, well, what chapter are you on? I said, well, it's about taking equity out of one property and going to the next. He says, well, that's what I do. He goes, I'm from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And he was there for 3 weeks. He's smiling, not a care in the world. I still picture him like drinking a drink by the pool, didn't care, right? In that passive income, you know, state. And he said, I bought a school in Allentown. We ended up converting it to apartments. This stuff is real. So the next week, what chapter are you on here? So these chapters started to come alive, and it was nice. So that's what I do in my book, and that's what I really like to do here. Like, if I can get those chapters to come alive for someone, real pictures, real graphics. Fast forward, last year I'm writing this book. And I tracked this guy down, Marco Harrelson, right? And I have this app. I found his wife's cell phone number. He's 79 years old. He's living out west. And I called her. They just got back from Hawaii. He said, he'd love to hear from you. He has a lot of students, you know, that call him. You know, he made a couple people billionaires. I said, well, I'm not a billionaire. I said, but I've done quite well. He called me the next day. I took the call. And you might thought a rock star called me. Why? Because that was the first person who introduced me to this concept and this, you know, attraction to passive income. And I cherished that for my entire, like, I still have the book. I mean, it's crumbled, it's got grease all over it, suntan lotion, but I still have it. But if I could be that person for somebody now just starting out, And I read the other day, it's like so many real estate people hide. They don't tell you how they did it. And if they do, they're trying to sell you a course and they're full of crap and they don't know the real stuff that, you know, to be successful. So that was the motivation behind the book. That's the motivation helping here at Rowan. And again, just maybe when I'm 79, somebody will call me.
Hopefully, yeah. Maybe it'll be one of us. That would be amazing. As a last question, what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs or students who want to reach your level of success one day?
All right. So one of the things people don't, I always talk about how and what. People are like, how do I do it and what do I do? And you, the number one thing you need to think about is a goal. Where am I going? So you really think about that. And I tailor this to everybody. So it could be a 1-year goal. It could be a 5-year goal. It could be a 10-year goal. So once you know where you're going, then you can develop the how. How am I going to get there? And people, oh, I don't have money. I don't have this. I don't have that. Writing this book, two things that are free that I keep writing and writing and writing, research and education. It is so, it's free, so easy. Get your butt off the couch. Go out there. Start driving. I tell this story. I have two guys that are trying to get into real estate, and they're like, well, you know, guy's not calling me back. You know, I can't find this first flip. I said, give me the phone. I call this guy. His name's Patrick. He does these flips and he flips contracts called wholesaling. So I call him. He says, yeah, I got something in Mantua. I said, guys, get in the car. Watch. Well, where are we going? I said, I have no idea, but watch what happens. So we get in the car. We drive by the house. It's a disaster. It what we could buy it for, I don't think it's worth it. We drive by another house under contract. Let me call him. Why are you calling him? You have no idea what that guy is going to say. Guy told us exactly what that home sold for. The realtor lived in that neighborhood. The realtor said, I'll meet you at this house, right? So then we put an offer in on the place. The guys ended up not getting it because they were disciplined. I teach set it and forget it. Set that price. Our price was $205. The guy wanted $220. Walk. You're not going to, you can't get caught up. But what that did was, if they would have still been in that office, right, not going out, it was free to drive around. It was free to talk to that realtor, research and education. And then all of a sudden, these opportunities come that you have to get that, you know, that how. And that's the last part, action, right? Once we have that goal, once we figure out how to do it, it's action. You have to actively go out there and just, you know, that perseverance and just acting, because so many people talk, they get excited. And I'm in these groups. And then Monday comes around and all of a sudden the car payment comes in, they're at work, and then they lose that motivation because it's that daunting 9-to-5 job where they're just going. So one thing I still do, I don't have all the answers, but I get lazy sometimes. I get passive and I listen to great podcasts. I listen to motivational things on Instagram because I need that too. Like that need to be around. It's one thing to know what you want to do, but a good third of my book is on mindset. And I heard this guy say, and it's so true, when I was in my 20s, I thought it was 80% hard work and grit and 20% mindset. 20 years later, it's the opposite. It is 20% hard work and grit and totally 80% mindset. Because you can decide yourself out of everything right in the beginning. You can't act. Doubt and fear will get in the way. But it's just, you got to keep yourself around positive people, have that good attitude. Try to overcome doubt and fear. And I'll tell you, I write a chapter on every one of those words. There's 7 words out there. And I do real life lessons on each one of those words, and you just got to plow through it. And I'm a victim of it too, because it's tough. I mean, you go out there, but again, surround yourself around good podcasts, good Instagram posts, motivational, positive people, and you will succeed.
That's fantastic. And you know, most people would just say, go out there and try, but I think you really took it to the next level. So thank you for that one. And to all of you listeners out there, really hope you enjoyed this episode. I know this has been one of my favorites so far.
Thank you for listening. Rowan is proud to be an official knowledge hub of the International Council for Small Business. Our AACSB award-winning entrepreneurship programs challenge students to solve real problems in bold and impactful ways. If you're interested in supporting entrepreneurship at Rowan, or want to get more involved by hiring an intern, speaking to a class, or being featured as a case study, contact us at rcie@rowan.edu.